Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 512, Ascension.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie.
And we're almost done with Prodigy. We got a few more to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
getting down to the wire here, which means we're wrapping up all of the subplots and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Which feels weird because we're kind of just running in place for the next two, but
if you, like Al and I, were like, boy, I hope there's a lot more to do with the Diviner, then you're in luck.
Yep.
It's Diviners all the way down.
Well, in fairness, the actual Diviner himself doesn't appear very much.
No, but I believe he's still dead or in the Phantom Zone or something.
He's still here. He was, because he was in a cage or some shit.
Oh, that's right.
But he's also not.
He's sad about what I did to my prodigy.
But I don't think that's him yet. Like, because of time, I don't think it's him yet. I don't know.
No,
There's the
evil Diviner, and then there's like the not teenager, because he's still like 50 or something, but like,
yeah, like he's the one who's like, he hasn't assumed the title yet. He's just like a guy named Wally or something.
Like, yeah, it's just like, someday I'd like to be the Diviner and make my prodigy proud of me.
Please don't, Wally. We beg.
I'm going to make the pointiest robot available.
Bond.
How British am I?
Mm-hmm. All right.
And then we're going to drive around in the Rev 5.
All right. Let's get into it. Yeah, as usual, it's a two-parter, so we're splitting up the summary here. So,
I love these two-parters.
They've used some of them to good effect, I would say, but not so much this time. This definitely could have been a one-parter.
Yeah.
Here we go.
For a memo. Okay.
Maggie set me up to write her a little handover bit between parts one and two, so I need to remember to do that, or else the first part of her summary isn't going to make sense. Don't forget, Al. Don't let Maggie down. Right. So, with everyone finally reunited after the dumb events of last episode, Admiral Janeway ponders her next move. Well, we've got the Protostar, and we know it needs to go back in time to Tars Lamora. Why don't we call Admiral Jellicoe to get permission first? Shocking absolutely no one, Jellicoe denies them said permission and orders them back home. The Department of Temporal Investigations is much better suited to a mission like this, he tells them, especially considering all the insane time shenanigans you got up to in the Delta Quadrant. Janeway starts kicking rocks and muttering about red tape and about how the man won't let her do what she wants, and Kate, I really came to love you despite the terribleness of your show, but I think we might be in another Troy needs to be wearing pants situation because I find myself agreeing with Jellicoe again. DTI probably is better suited to do this. Nevertheless, there are generally two ways an I don't want to follow these orders plot can go. Either the captain just ignores the orders and does what she wants, or she's overtaken by events as some new catastrophe presents itself. We seem to have gone with option two this time because here's Ascensia again. And really, we should have seen this coming given the title of these episodes. She chews the scenery for a minute or two, ranting about the council and destiny, probably? I'm not going to lie, I was kind of tuned out during all this, despite the Jamila Jamil of it all. Then she attacks Voyager with highly advanced weaponry that seriously outmatches them and drains their shields. Where could she possibly have gotten this technology, everyone wonders. Not where, someone probably says. When? Because these weapons came from time. Which is pretty stupid. Then we find out Ascensia is holding Wesley prisoner and somehow exploiting his whole nebulous time-space-mind thing, so maybe she's not actually as evil as we think she is? Like, maybe we just jumped to the wrong conclusions because she sounds like that?
Thanks, Al. I assume you introduced me or something. I'm writing my summary first.
Ah, damn it!
So, we basically launch into a giant space battle with Voyager, the Protostar, and Nova Squadron all flying around shooting at drones. You know, Prodigy, you had just beaten those allegations that you're a Star Wars ripoff, and then you had your tiny fighters battle a giant space station. We also learn that Ascensia has captured Wesley and is torturing him, using his powers of time, space, and imagination to figure out how to kill everyone. Frankly, I think she should just go back to torturing Wesley. Then everyone wins. Mm-hmm. She also tells him he talks too much, and I have never seen a more understandable villain in all of Star Trek. Meanwhile, away from me making fun of Will Wheaton, Nova Squadron realizes that the drones they're fighting are following Starfleet protocol. Dal tells them to stop following protocol and just get real chaotic with it, in a nice callback to his Kobayashi Maru episode. Magellan enacts his plan by flying in circles. Look, she's trying, okay? This isn't her strong suit. So Essentia launches her big and deadly attack on Voyager, a big gold spear that smashes through the deck like the Kool-Aid man pumped full of napalm. Spear's part starts giving off makes you age really fast rays that force Commander Tarsus into early retirement. The crew realizes they need to deactivate it at the source, but that will result in sacrificing a crew member. Luckily, Zero's body just passed its 90-day warranty and is actively falling apart anyway, so off they go for a quick heroic sacrifice. Nova Squadron blows up the space station by succeeding in doing that deadly maneuver that got Wesley's friend killed back in the first duty, and Zero dies saving Voyager from extreme old age. The worst thing that could ever happen to anyone, according to me, Maggie. Luckily, Jenkin Pog's been whipping up a fresh new Zero body, and he packs our gaseous pal into a swank new robot that's in the style of their old portal design. Only this time it can feel things. With the day temporarily saved and Zero back in a hot spheroid form that can actually touch things, Michelle and Zero run off to make out. And the defeated Essentia tortures Wesley some more. What a great episode.
Yeah. I'm actually going to go right into my good thing because it ties into mm-hmm. the last thing you're talking about here. I love creating a situation where Zero has to sacrifice their new body to save mm-hmm. the day. Like, that's so much better. We just assumed it was going to deteriorate naturally and it would be sad. But like, letting it be a heroic thing was great. And also tying it, like, Jenkin Pog actively being mm-hmm. the person designing the body and like one, being there for the surgical consult just to support his friend, but two, actively helping with his engineering skills was such a great way to keep that character engaged in what should just be Zero's story. Like,
exactly.
Jenkum and Zero aren't really characters you expect to be like, oh, of course, Zero and mm-hmm. I don't know, Rock, because they're both sort of science guys. But
yeah.
But Zero and Jenkum, less obvious and a very good choice, I thought.
No, I love my good friend Jenkin Pog.
Jenkin Pog loves you too. Clonk, clonk, clonk. So, yeah.
See, we have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
It all works out.
And it kind of ties into your good thing, too.
I mean, here's the thing. Zero gets their new body this week, and it's basically just their old body because, hey, this is how I see myself, but made better through science.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I would attach myself to that, but here we are.
Who could say? No, it's
subtle. It's very subtle.
It's basically me plus an upgrade, which is like mm-hmm. the only real problem I had with this body was I can't touch, and we fixed mm-hmm. that, so jolly mm-hmm. good.
And then also they and Michelle hold hands at the end, and I'm like, yup.
Mm-hmm. Good.
There it is.
Which, again, like making out to a Vulcan.
Yep, absolutely.
The finger touch thing is well established in canon as being pretty intimate.
There is a thing I've noticed, and I am sure this is just me projecting, but like when Michelle first sees Zero's new body, there's a real oh, mm-hmm. and when Zero shows up in their new better look, I'm back in the sphere look. Michelle is like oh,
mm-hmm.
my assumption here is that Michelle has sphere fever.
Could be. That would explain spinning in circles during the battle.
Mm. She's just flying around in circles. This is sex to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have a great time.
No, it's not Ponfar time.
Nope.
That's just how horny I am.
Have fun, you nasty freak mm-hmm. celebratory.
Look, this is a children's show. They can't say it overtly, but mm-hmm. we know what's going on here.
Yeah. We've been watching.
Yeah. No, the whole Zero of it all was very good. Like, A plus yes. for that. Everything else,
mm-hmm.
not so
I mean,
much.
This is the thing. Everything else is zap, zap, fly around. We have to defeat the giant fucking space station that's shooting beams at everything.
And I, at first, when Essentia's giant ship emerges from whatever anomaly or cloud or whatever the fuck mm-hmm. it comes out from behind a tree, I don't know.
Yep. I was behind the tree the whole time.
How did we not see her? She's right there.
There's a lot of British accents in this episode, by the way.
Yep. It reminded me of Nero's ship from the Abrams movies. And
oh, yeah, the good ship, Nero's ship.
Yeah, and Narada, it was called.
Yes, thank you.
I've watched that movie 100 times, so I know this.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, at first I was like, oh, if they got stuff from the future, maybe they got stuff from other realities. Like, that could have been mm-hmm. a cool sort of greatest hits thing without being too, like kind of like the Kobayashi Maru episode. Like,
yeah, yeah.
They could be shooting, like, not this, but, like, a Genesis device. Or, like, I'm just trying to think of big weapons from previous Star Trek. Like,
yeah.
That could have been an interesting
thing. There's plenty
to
choose from.
Yeah. Yeah. But they didn't do that.
No, it's just, I think it's the Rev 1 or something. So it's, like, the number one version of the Rev, I think it was the Rev 12 or the Rev 9 or something from the first season.
Yeah, you referenced that when we were chatting before the show, and I was like, what are you doing? But, like, oh, yeah, you remember those details about the Diviner, because you're not quite as irritated by the Diviner as I am.
No, I'm just like, yeah, what's your big stupid ship, you stupid fuck?
I was not kidding.
Oh, the Rev.
I was not kidding in my summary.
The Rev 12 is only. Yeah.
Go ahead.
The Rev 12 is more powerful than the Rev 4 and the Rev 3 combined.
Mm-hmm.
It has all the power of 2 Rev 6s.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Are you going to factor your ship now? Come on.
All right, go ahead. I cut you off like 5 times.
No, that's okay. We have a slight delay, so sometimes we do that inadvertently. I wasn't kidding in my summary where she starts ranting about the council and about all mm-hmm. this specific stuff from their planet, and I could not care less.
The council will be destroyed. They get a phone call from the Diviner at one point. You have to do something. She's destroyed the council.
What council? What are you talking about?
The Council of Elders who decide everything on our stupid fantasy planet.
I mean, really, you nailed it a few weeks ago when your whole summary was just all this fantasy bullshit. When
they first united at the meeting of Pentuzla.
And we forged...
There were 5 blades forged, 1 for the Dwarven Kings.
Oh, God. I'm going to blow the Tolkien whistle on you.
Uh-huh. Stop it.
Yeah, no Tolkien. It's like the
no
fucking,
Tolkien.
It's like the guitar shop from Wayne's World.
Go back to Unicorn Fuck Club.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's
the
not
first
my joke.
Rule of Unicorn Fuck Club
is you go back there.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, my bad thing. Like, I hate being this guy. I hate that it's my bad thing so often. But the show keeps doing it. There were so many boring Star Wars style flying sequences.
Man.
Like, it's just it was so boring.
You can get me with a boring Star Wars flying ship sequence if it's good, but like, I have seen tiny ships fighting a big thing so many times.
Yep, exactly so. And like, you're right to call out, I didn't catch this, the callback to the Kobayashi Maru episode where it's like chaos is a thing they can't anticipate, and that was good.
Yeah.
But that's it. Otherwise, it was so... And, okay, Tom Paris got a name check. That was all right. Like, the...
Yeah, this was designed by Tom Paris.
Yeah, the little fighters that they're in. Like, he designed the Delta Flyer. I would buy he also designed some fighters. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. They do say it like the kids at home watching, like, who the fuck's Tom Paris? Was it made in Paris? Like, or whatever.
I mean, the kids at home are going to miss the deep Star Trek references always.
For sure.
That's just how it goes. Like, you think they knew who Odo was?
Fair.
Like, they knew who Spock
was. At least they
might
know
Scott.
Plate.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. What was your bad thing?
Bribble takes a shit in Rock's pocket in this episode. I hate Bribble.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it so much. I wish it was dead. I wish it would get cancer of the big, cute, adorable eyes.
Ocular cancer?
Mm-hmm. Just lying in a giant hospital bed.
Mm-hmm. The doctor's like, well, I could fix it, but I don't want to.
I don't want one of these. Please state the nature of the medical abomination.
I just, like, we talked about this, and I don't want the whole show to be about this every week, but, like, they saw Murph, and they decided, what if we had 2 Murphs? And, like, why?
I mean, that's it feels very much like, we need another toy. Get something cute the kids will like.
But there isn't one.
No, I know.
We talked about this a lot.
They made 5 toys for this.
Yeah, we talked about this a lot when we covered The Brave and the Bold, where so much of that show was so toyetic, and then there were no toys of it. Like,
this is like
you're missing a step.
Now that I know Now that I know about this, I think about it a lot. Like, every time I watch a kid's show, I'm like, okay, how does this work out? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it feels like it's them going like, here, make a toy of this. And the toy company's like, well, your show's not popular and it's getting canceled anyway, so no.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you asked us to put more cute mascots in here.
I don't know. Maybe they wanted to. I don't know. Like, maybe they're like, we're giving the kids a lot of dark stuff. Maybe we need something to offset that.
I understand that is a possibility. It's so opposite of everything I think about when I think about TV.
Yeah, same. But also,
the idea that there's someone out there that's like, no, we should put another cute mascot in here.
But the thing is, the most formative show in my childhood was Transformers. And for you, it was probably Ninja Turtles. Like, we grew up on toy commercials masquerading as cartoons. Like, this is not new for anyone in my age group through your age group and beyond. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's just how cartoons work.
Yeah. They haven't even Transformers. They must have. Like,
they had Transformers. The whole show was by these toys.
Yeah. No,
I mean,
Turtles didn't really have one either because they were all, like, they did a couple, but, like.
I know you're talking about the cutesy characters, but I mean the entire line was, like.
Well, yes.
You're supposed to buy the four turtles and their friends and the villains and the vehicles.
Yeah, and here's different turtles because we know you already have the turtles.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
we
no, there is.
Everybody in the Transformers comic so that you'll buy the new Transformers.
I mean, that was the whole thing about the movie is, like, they killed them off for the next line and everyone, and the kids
That's
were like, what'd you do? Like, well. It never bothered me as a kid. It's just like, yeah, I don't know. It's time for the new guys. Who cares?
Yeah.
The show's already an ensemble of like 50 characters. I didn't get attached to any one because that's how it rolls, man. But anyway, I was a cynical child.
Same.
They ran at the beginning of the episode. They talk about that they now have the Protostar like secure and they ran antivirus software on the red ball. Like, could you have just done that the whole time and spared so much misery? That's weird.
Jacob Pogg has never heard of antivirus software.
Oh,
Jacob Pogg's arm is crawling with malware.
We have opened Jacob Pogg's laptop. We know.
Jacob Pogg keeps paying this guy and he keeps not unlocking Windows 95.
Jacob, it's the year 2400. Why are you using Windows 95?
I used to, like, back when I worked at the comic store, they would occasionally be like, Maggie, can you order the comic order? And I would log on to the most virus-riddled computer I had ever seen in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know this, the people at home probably don't. I used to go through computers like nobody's fucking business.
Oh yeah, you know your way around a virus.
Uh-huh. I don't know my way around fixing one, but I certainly know my way around having 10 billion of them.
Did you get a virus? Did you get 900 viruses?
Did you get 8,973 viruses? Yes.
Very yes.
Very yes.
Let's see what else.
What happened?
Kate says it's not every day you meet a version of yourself from the future, and like, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. On Voyager, it is literally every day.
It was every day for you, Kate.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Kate. I'm Kate too. I'm Kate from 5 minutes ago.
There was a cute moment where because
I'm. Go ahead.
No, please.
I'm seven from 2 years from now, trying to fix all of this bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so seven from 2 years means you're 14. Oh, stop with this again. You're losing Cisco.
Captain, the Rev 56 is outside.
How many revs is that?
That's so many revs.
Mm-hmm. No, there's a cute moment. So the Protostar is there, and it's being manned by Hologram Janeway. And there's a cute moment where Admiral calls over and goes, Janeway to Janeway. And just, it was cute.
Hello. Hello, Hologram Janeway. Hello, regular Janeway.
They're still trying to make Go Fast a thing.
Oh, yeah, they are. That'll be like the last line in the fucking series.
Yeah, probably.
Let's go fast into season 3.
Which never came.
Yep.
You went fast into a wall.
Boosh.
No, Chuck was like, yeah, why don't you send Dal out in a fighter? He knows how to go fast. Like,
uh-huh.
If one person is not going to sell that catchphrase, it's you.
Yeah. He did have the moment. I really like the moment where they're like, Chuck basically has to go run the Protostar, and he brings the Protostar kids with him.
Mm-hmm.
And Dal's like, oh, you're bringing us? And he's like, yeah, it's our ship. I'm like,
yeah, that
okay,
was good.
That's, I like that. I don't have much good to say about Chuck because he gives me not much good to go from, but no. That's a good line.
No, and it was a good payoff from a couple weeks ago where they were all working together and he gradually came to realize, oh, these kids do know the ship and they are actually good. There's a good moment when they're over there and Chuck's giving them sort of the pep talk and he's like, we only get one shot at this. And Dal says, oh, don't be so dramatic.
I love that Captain, who I have great deal of respect for.
The doctor's like, when things calm down, we need to talk about this because nobody respected that guy. I've got the receipts on that.
I just don't understand it, doctor. Why doesn't anyone respect me? Well, you're very boring and no one likes you.
That's my considered medical opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the guy who won't stop singing, saying you're annoying.
He hasn't sung at all in this series.
I know.
And I really appreciate that.
They have mentioned that he wrote, you know, Hollow novels and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't get into them specifically, so that's.
He might have said at one point that I have a lovely singing voice, but like, he's never had his fucking like opera or whatever. And thanks, we appreciate that.
It could be that Picardo's getting up in years and can't hit those notes anymore.
Oh, that might be. Yeah.
And actually, he's going to be in Starfleet Academy, so there's a chance it'll come up again, but maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully not.
Oh, jeez. Doc, maybe you should stick to the Hollow novels.
Mm-hmm.
I did that thing where I reprogrammed myself, so I look old. Data did it all the time.
Mm-hmm. And Guinan also did it.
Yep.
I think Doctor Who's used that at least once when they bring back old doctors.
Yep. I made myself look old so that you won't feel weird. I wasn't going to, but whatever.
I mean, now you look old and I feel weird.
Mm-hmm. I used to be the doctor. All right, Grandpa, let's get you to bed.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
I don't know. Like I said in my summary, I still think we have established that there's a Department of Temporal Investigations. They are actually better suited. Like, there's a whole act of the first episode where it's like, I can't believe Starfleet is making us do this. I'm like, they're being sensible. Why? Like,
yeah.
To me, it's lazy Star Trek writing to always go to, we have orders and I don't want to follow them. Like, Disco did this a lot too, where Michael was just like, well, I'm not going to do that. Like, you need to establish that this is a chain of command, that this is a hierarchy, that normally you listen. That way, those moments when you don't listen have more impact.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why they did the thing this time where they're like, I guess we're going home. Oh, no, the Rev 474.
Yeah, I know. But it's still just like, has a Starfleet officer ever just taken orders and just said, yep, you're the boss, I will do that? Mm-hmm. Like, and then
I assume they're the ones we don't get to watch shows about.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But Picard mostly was like that, and then in the movies they acted like he never was like that. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's
he was.
He's mostly a book guy.
He was a good officer. He did his job. Listened to admirals and like only disagree with them when it turned out that they had worms or something,
or when it turned out they were Nechev because she was kind of a jerk. But
yeah. Just remember that one where he's like, I bought the special tea set for Nechev, so she won't be mad at me.
She's like, what's this cup? I don't care about this. Wow.
No cup.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I hate Picard and Sisko.
Mm-hmm. I hate all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Every captain.
Mm-hmm. From Captain A to Captain Z.
Yep.
Captain Z's like, oh, what do you got against me?
Come on, guys. I never get to do anything.
Hey, guys, Captain Z here.
Captain Z, going on an adventure with Guardian Zed.
Let's go on a warp.
Captain Zed and Coach Z in the adventures of the adventure of the nasty jockstrap.
I forgot about Guardian Z.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. I can tell, like, I go through your notes as I'm taking mine, and I can tell when I'm synced up with you where it's like we've reached the exact moment, because we both write something like, oh, fuck off, Murph.
Yep, yep, yep. Like, yep, it's when Murph does or says anything.
Correct. We're not always on the same page, but with Murph, we sure are.
Oh, yeah. We hate Murph.
Mm-hmm. Well, he sucks. He was okay at the beginning.
Suck.
Like, mm-hmm. as a pet, he was all right. I didn't
love
him.
That's the thing. I liked him when he was the dog.
I didn't love him then, but I was willing to deal with him. But now we have a dog, and we also still have Murph.
Yep.
Oh.
We have Murph at home and at McDonald's.
And Gribble. I mean, Bribble.
Ugh. I am the weird little animal that lives on your shoulder.
I think I made this joke last week. I'm just going to call him Rusty Shackleford.
Yep.
And actually, weird bit of synchronicity there. I wanted to talk about Rust. Like,
oh, yeah.
They talk about that. So whatever the gold, would you say the golden spear? That was pretty good.
The gold spear.
Yes. The weapon that that Essentia shoots over at Voyager, like, puts out time waves that makes things old, which that's actually not bad. Like, if you're if all this shit is about time, like hyper aging things to the point where they decay, or if you're alive, you die, like that makes sense. But they talk about how the shuttle bay rusts and how Zero's old body would have rusted, and like, are you making these things out of iron? Like, this is the future. I know you have crazy future alloys. The ship's not made of tin. Like,
yeah, like, is rust still a problem when you're on spaceships? Like, Jesus.
Like, I understand when you oxidize certain kinds of metals. That's about the extent of my chemistry knowledge. But like, I understand when iron and I think tin are, because tin roof rusted. Are exposed to too much.
Well, the Tin Man rusted, so.
Well, that's true too. But I was going with I was going with the Rev B-52 in this case.
Oh, sure, yes. The Rev B-52.
Mm-hmm. But like, the ships are made of duranium or something, like some made up metal like that, and like, I didn't think they would rust. It seems weird.
I have a hard time believing the space shuttle rusts.
Yeah, and we've seen ships like shot through time or preserved over the century. Like, Data's head didn't rust after 500 years. Like,
yeah, man.
And we've seen ships like that have just been drifting in space forever. Like, it's not a thing. It was such a weird thing to pull.
Yeah, wasn't the fucking the Discovery was fucking floating around for like 8,000 years or something?
No, it went through a time hole. I thought
that's. Right.
Oh wait. No, I think you're talking about the end. Where
they have to catch up with Zora. It's like, well, we got to put you in the future for no particular reason.
Let's make the whole finale about this instead of
catching
up with the characters. But yeah, it just, I don't know. And you're right. Like, the space shuttle probably wouldn't rust either. It's just,
I would hope not.
Yeah. It's just a weird, I don't know. It's a weird detail. Yeah. And like, they have a science consultant. We've met her. Her name is Erin. She's great. But she should have
more
said,
of her,
hey,
please.
Probably not rusting.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to rust. Don't worry.
Yep. Your dusty old bones aren't full of green dust. It's okay.
You guys talking about dusty old me?
No.
No.
Dusty old bones.
Bribble.
Mm-hmm.
Dusty old bones full of green dust.
Bill.
Khan. Noonien Singh.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see. What else?
Michelle.
Chuck. And now I'm just reminded once again of whatever listener wrote it and said that Chuck should have been John Redcorn.
Yep. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's a Native American character that I like and respect, but is also kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah. Love that guy.
Yeah, me too. What else?
Let's see, they catch Voyager in a ninja net, causing me to throw shit at my computer.
Ninja net's the bane of your existence.
Uh-huh. Is there literally anything else that happened in this episode that wasn't pew pew, look out, an asteroid?
Well, like I said, it definitely didn't feel like it should have been a two-parter because there was so much, like, action padding. And, like, because of that, we don't have an hour's worth of stuff to discuss because there was only about 20 minutes of plot.
Yeah.
So,
I have the moment when they they're about to head back to Earth to drop everything off, and Chuck's just like, "Yeah, we'll go off and we'll make sure we can get this put away or whatever." And I'm just thinking, dude, you've been gone for 10 years. Don't you want to check on your cat or something?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that cat's long gone. You mean Dr. Ta'ana?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They were in a relationship before he disappeared.
I mean, he was with Seven. He always, like, somehow dates way out of his weight class. So.
Oh, God, I forgot he was with Seven. That was insane.
I read a quote from Jeri Ryan recently, like, in the last couple of weeks, and it might be an old quote, I don't know, but I just saw it, where she's like, and they asked me to come back for Picard, and I was like, I don't want to come back and date Chakotay.
Yeah, fair.
They're like, no, Jeri, that's over. It's a whole different plot. She's like, okay, what do you got?
Listen, Jeri, no one thought that was a good idea.
But that's where we left her.
Yeah.
So it's sensible for her to say, if we pick up where we left off, I don't want to do that.
Hey, so, Chuck, what happened with you and Seven? Oh, boy, that did not last. Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
Once she had access to people who weren't this crew, and specifically the main characters of this crew, good God.
I mean, she still went for Raffi, who is an attractive lady, but is also a trash fire.
I mean, listen, some people like a trash fire.
That's true.
I can fix this. No one can fix this. Maybe Worf can fix this.
Maybe if you still had access to the Borg Collective and you assimilated her, you could collectively fix her. But you on your own, no.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. And again, I like a good trash fire character. I wish Raffi had been a little better, but I get what they were trying to do with her.
That's the thing. If you balance out the trash fire with, like, and here's why she's good. Here's why we like her, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And we didn't get much of that, unfortunately.
No. Also, any of their relationship when they were together would have been nice.
They gave it, yeah, that's true. That's true. Because I was going to say, they were holding hands at the end of season one and like a split second thing. And then in season two, they had already broken up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're right.
Mm. I did not come here to fucking rip Picard apart again, but good God.
Yeah. Look, we're running short. If we got other Star Trek shit to talk about, which actually reminds me.
Yes.
And this is probably more of a supplemental discussion, but I'm going to bring it up here just because we are running very short. Mm. Paramount has officially buried the Chris Pine Star Trek.
Yes.
Like, that's done, and they're working on a new reboot with some other guys. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. So I read the guys that are working on it are the guys who made the last Dungeons & Dragons movie, which I loved, so.
Yeah, I actually am not a D&D guy at all, and I still kind of liked it, so that's good. The AV Club did such a good fucking headline. Let me see if I can dig this up real quick.
I didn't know the AV Club was still around. Holy shit.
So they're run by The Onion. And The Onion was bought by some fucking venture capitalist, like one of those things that like ruined fucking Toys R Us and all that stuff.
Yeah, of course.
And tried to run them into the ground. And then the original Onion guys like pooled together and bought it back.
Mm.
And so both The Onion and the AV Club are doing a lot better.
Oh, that's cool.
So because like they bought their company back and it's not being.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I will check that out.
Paramount taps Chris Pine's D&D buddies to make Chris Pine free Star Trek movie. Which that's a good headline.
That's really good.
Yeah. It makes me sad, but yeah. No, that D&D movie was fun. And if they make a fun Star Trek movie, that's good. But also, I really liked those guys.
Yeah, same. It would have been nice. At least one more movie, you know?
So you know it's the end?
Yeah, they deserve a send-off. They were a great crew, you know?
I still, to this day, think they should do some big fuck-off crossover thing for one of the big anniversaries like Doctor Who always does and bring Chris Pine together with fucking Anson Mount and, I don't know, Janeway or somebody. Like,
absolutely.
Just give us a big fuck-off, dumb alternate reality time, whatever dumb thing they're doing. But, like, just bring him in for one last thing and tie him into the shows.
Mm-hmm. Well... Hopefully that new movie will be better, but probably it's going to be the TNG remake.
So you say. I don't think that, but I don't know what the fuck they're doing anymore.
That's where my money is. They are going to want something so safe to start with, you know? Like, might be other stuff coming, but like...
But it's a movie, and those movies, like the next-gen movies never did that well.
I know.
So I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know. I have never been more cynical about the state of entertainment right now.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always been pretty cynical about the state of entertainment.
I don't know. I feel like we were fresh-faced, naive, like, kids when we started this podcast.
God, you ain't kidding. Oh, my God.
15 years ago. We're like, oh, look at this great 60s. It's a little cheesy, but it's so fun, and we got so much great stuff ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we did, but, you know.
Yeah. Listen, that's been more of a good run than it hasn't. It's just that when it's bad, it's really, really bad.
I don't know about that. Like, I agree. I have had a good time and there has been a lot of good stuff, but I don't know about that ratio.
You might be right. It might just be that I like hanging out with you.
Yes. And our friends. Like,
yeah,
we have a good time doing the show. I don't deny that, but like, you know.
God, we are running. We are looking for stuff to talk about when we're like, I love you, Al.
Yeah, I love you too, Maggie. But yeah, we're... that's about it. Like, there's not much else to discuss.
No shit.
All right. So
let's see. What else is in the news today, Russell?
Well, there were a couple of pieces of Star Trek news, so, you know.
Yeah. That's good, because the rest of the news ain't great.
No. No, God. Well, there's a couple of funny things, but...
Yeah.
If they're true.
Fingers crossed. God, that would be so funny.
Yes, it would. We don't need to get into that, though.
No.
We need to... And this is, again, more of a supplemental discussion, but there's that fucking Scouts show.
Oh, fuck, that's right.
I forgot
about that. My nephew watched an episode of Scouts. My nephew, who is not even two.
Well,
because it comes on after the Spider-Man, Spidey and his Amazing Friends show, which he loves.
Which is Spidey for Babies, I assume?
Yeah, Spider-Gwen and Miles. For babies.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to figure out where that fits, but because when we were talking a minute ago, I was like, we've done almost 1,000 episodes of Star Trek because we're up to like, the total is like 960 something. And so I went to Memory Alpha and they's like, well, the current series is Scouts. Like, fuck, I guess it is.
Yeah.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I guess we'll have to find, like, how long are those?
Well, yeah, I was looking, like, they're nowhere close to done. Like, they did a batch of episodes, and they're coming back next year. So, like, we'll do it. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's all for this time. You should definitely write to us. We got a supplemental coming up in a couple of weeks. And
yeah, please write to us.
We are already using up some of those topics here and now. So, like, you should write to us to give us more shit to talk about.
Please.
Post it
for the love of God.
Gmail. Yep.
Uh-huh.
The website is postatomichorror.com. The Patreon is patreon.com/Algar. You get episodes way in advance. Next week, we are covering, I say touch because one of them has touch in the title.
You got the touch!
Entitled Brink and Touch of Gray. And I hope Touch of Gray is not Shades of Gray.
God, please.
We'll see. And I think that's all for this time.
Yeah, see you, folks.
The Postatomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2025. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.